In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. We just heard the parable of the Good Samaritan. I'd like to give you the Marxist interpretation of that parable. There was a privileged man who went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, who had lived his entire life off of the misery of the underclass, living in a privileged position, and he fell among the people. And the people, seeing that this man had been unjustly enriched at their expense, took everything that he had and beat the snot out of him to punish him, and they left him there. And that would be basically the end of the parable. That's the Marxist understanding of justice. And to the extent that they have any concept of mercy, they don't extend it to people that they don't consider to be worthy of that mercy. That's quite the opposite of the biblical concept of mercy and justice. In the Bible, we talk about justice in the sense of us having an obligation to not take from other people things that don't belong to us, to not lie about other people, to not bear false witness against them, to make sure that they are given a fair shake in a court. But biblical justice doesn't mean that everybody has equality of outcomes, which is what the Marxists would want us to believe. Although it's interesting that the equality of outcomes never extends to the actual upper class of the Communist Party, who seem to be living in a very privileged position, but the critical theory of privilege never gets applied to those people in a communist system. It's only applied to people outside of the communist system. In the Bible, there was a concept of a need for everyone to take care of the poor. For example, if you had a field, you were not supposed to harvest every last thing that was in your field. You would leave the edges of the field unharvested. You wouldn't send your servants back to go make sure that they didn't miss anything. And then the poor were allowed to go and to glean. And also, people who, for whatever reason, had fallen into a situation where they were obligated to sell their property, that property wasn't gone forever, because when the year of Jubilee came, that property would revert back to that family. And so there were various ways in which the law of Moses gave people second chances. But there was never any idea that you could possibly have equality of outcomes because people are different. People make different choices. And when people make bad choices, bad things generally result. And when people make good choices, typically better things result. But what the scriptures tell us is that if we are among those people who have done well in life, for whatever reason, either because we were born into a family where people previous to us had made good decisions, or whether we had made good decisions ourselves that put us in that situation, that we had an obligation to extend mercy to those around us. But it was never at the point of a gun. The parable doesn't have the Good Samaritan coming along and saying, "Oh, what a pity that this has been allowed to happen. I'm going to go and petition the government so that they can tax the rich so we'll have patrols along the streets to take care of people like this, and then walk off and leave the person there." No, what the Good Samaritan did was he took his own time, he went out of his own way, and he took care of this man, and he brought him to an inn, and out of his own pocket, he provided the means for his care and offered to pay whatever else would needed to be paid. So this was a voluntary thing. You might ask, well, why is Father John talking about Marxism on the Sunday after Thanksgiving? Well, I'll tell you, it's in my mind for two reasons this week. One is the death of my father-in-law, and that reminded me just of things about it I already knew, and I'll tell you more about that. But also, last week, a teacher showed me a catalog from a education conference that was for English teachers that was held right here in Houston. And you might think, well, surely Texas isn't like California. We don't have a bunch of cultural Marxists running our education system. Every seminar that was in that catalog was all about how you could integrate social justice in this and awareness of inequality here or there. It was all cultural Marxism. It was just, you think you're sending your kids to school to learn English, to learn math, to learn how to write, to learn how to read, to learn history. But that's not what some people have in mind for your children. And I'm not trying to say that all teachers are this way, but what I will tell you is that this is increasingly a problem because the universities in the United States have unfortunately largely been taken over by people who have bought into cultural Marxism, even if they don't realize that that's what it is. Back in the 1930s, Marxists began to have an awareness that Marx's original theory that communism was going to be a natural result of class struggle and it was just going to happen on its own wasn't turning out to be true. And so you had Marxist theorists like Antonio Gramsci who came up with the idea that the problem that we have is that we've got these hegemonic cultures in place that are rooted in people's religion and traditions, and we need to get rid of that before people are going to buy into Marxism, because the poor they see themselves as identified with their country and with their faith rather than with their own interest as we see them. So we've got to come up with some way to separate these people from their faith and from their tradition so we can basically wipe the slate clean and start all over again, and it will all be great. It will be this socialist utopia. And then furthermore, in the 1930s, you had a group of scholars from Germany who left Nazi Germany because it wasn't very comfortable for them there, and they came to Columbia University here in the United States, and from there, their ideas began to spread. And in the United States in particular, they became increasingly aware that the idea of class struggle didn't appeal to Americans, because even poor Americans, they realized, considered themselves to be temporarily embarrassed millionaires that were just one step away from prosperity. Even poor people in America realized that they could do well. And so trying to tell them we need to wipe the slate clean in the United States and establish a communist dictatorship just didn't appeal to Americans. But how could they divide Americans? Well, they started raising issues of race, of sex, and later of gender identity, and a whole bunch of other things. And they're constantly, we're down to the point where we're talking about left-handed atheist black lesbians as a group that are oppressed. Now, that's not to say that there aren't any legitimate issues that they've identified. Certainly, in our history, there has been a history of racial oppression that we have to acknowledge. And there have been, in the past, cases and certain ways in which women have not been treated in a way that they should be. But rather than focusing on these legitimate issues, they're constantly moving on to the next thing. And they're continuing to push this idea that our culture is out to repress people. Our culture is bad. Our kids have been thoroughly schooled in every atrocity that's ever been committed by Western civilization, but you don't hear about the atrocities that we know about in living memory, the worst atrocities in the history of the human race, which brings me to my father-in-law. You know, there are polls in the United States of children that are beginning to think that communism maybe isn't such a bad thing. I mean, they obviously are being maleducated. Because I can tell you that if they were young people living in China when my father-in-law was a young man, they would have come away with a very different impression of that system. He was born in Shanghai. At the age of 16, he was at that particular point, Mao decided that the best education that young people could get would be to be sent out into the country and work. So he was sent from Shanghai, which is in the north coast of China, down to the mountains of South Central China. And he was worked like a slave. And I guarantee you that if he could trade places with someone on a plantation during slavery in the United States, he would have gladly done so. He didn't talk a lot about his experiences. But a couple years ago, he had a surgery, and when he was coming out of anesthesia, he was having horrible flashbacks And my wife asked him about it. And something about the air conditioning and the sound that it was making was reminding him of various things that had happened. And he told her about one incident that I remember where a man was executed by being lifted up in a crane and then dropped to his death. And that was just one thing that he mentioned. During that same period of time, I've read stories of things like a father who was forced to bury his son alive because his son had stole a potato from the field because they were starving. This is what communism is. This is the equality of outcomes when you've got equal misery, equal suffering among the people, because the government, a government that's rooted in atheism and in materialism, doesn't care about things like real justice or real mercy. They don't have any concept of the love of God. They don't care about the common people. They have a love of the common people sort of in a theoretical sense, but not in any particular sense, and they could really care less. And at various points in Mao's time as the leader of China, when he was talking about the possibility of a nuclear war with the United States, he basically said, we could afford to lose a few million people. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. That's how much he cared about the common people. These are the kind of people that we're talking about here. And so we need to educate our people. These people want to destroy our society and replace it with that. And maybe they don't all understand that, but that is where it heads. That's what happens when you create a system where you have this intelligentsia, upper class party that decides to make decisions for everybody else and impose a utopia after having wiped the slate clean. This is where it leads. You need to be on guard as never before. I prior to looking at that catalog, I was aware that this kind of stuff was sort of a creeping problem. I had no idea how pervasive it was becoming. If you have children and you love them, you need to think twice about whether you have them in a public school in the United States, even in Texas. Now, I'm not saying all schools are that way, but if you do have them in a public school, you need to be really scrutinized. What kind of text are they using? Talk to them about what they're learning in class, and you need to make sure that they get an education about what communism really is and cultural Marxism, what it's all about, where these people really are headed. You also need to be aware that in subtle ways, in the media, the entertainment that our children watch has these kinds of messages in them in an increasing way. And if you're going to let your kid watch them, you need to at least watch it with them and pay attention to these kinds of things and point out to them the messages that are being sent. But I would encourage you, particularly when your children are really young, to avoid that altogether. I know some people think we should just prepare our kids, we should teach them, we should instruct them and send them off into the world and let them change the world. Well, you know what? A six-year-old kid is not well equipped to be a missionary when he's got a teacher who's been steeped in this kind of stuff. It's just not likely that you're going to have a child who's going to be able to withstand that kind of constant pressure when they're spending most of their week in a school and they're being exposed to that. And again, I'm not saying all teachers are this way. I know that that's not the case. But what I'm afraid is true and have good reason to believe is true is that as the years go by, this is increasingly going to become a problem. We need to be looking at Orthodox schools if we're able to put them together, but homeschooling is an option. Even at Christian private school is certainly a better option than putting your children in this, but even there you need to be careful because they're surrounded by other children who are being exposed to this kind of stuff in the culture. If you want your child to grow up and be a Christian, you have to work in a way that you never would have had to work before. You can't just let your kid trust your kid to the culture and assume that it's going to turn out okay if you just let things go and let the system instruct your children. Children are our responsibility, not the state's. And we as families and as a church need to take that responsibility seriously, especially now. Amen.